The Guardian.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, and 24/7 support. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer code Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, World at Play special. From Belgium to Burkina Faso, we round up the global goals and highlights. Bentner's brace, Iceland, Raul Jimenez to society, and a hungry night for the Dutch. Holland 8-1, and they still have Turkey to follow. Meanwhile, England, after beating the Itches, they now face the Offskies. Can Wayne and the boys dance around those poles like our nation's proud Morris men sort of did of old? All of that, plus things getting shaky at Sheffield United, posts and more in this Football Weekly. Right, well, off we go then. Absolutely packed show today with all sorts of international delights. How many international delights? Well, first of all, surrounding this table, quite an international bunch. We've got Marcus Christensen out of Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah, and congratulations, because your boys are very much in the playoffs now.
Yes,
right?
Very much so.
Good
Thank
stuff.
You.
John Ashdown.
Hello, from the People's Republic of Yorkshire.
Right, right. And also England, more broadly speaking.
Well, yeah,
yeah, and we'll talk more about them later on, perhaps, part three. And Greg Bukowski.
Yeah,
yeah. One of those kind of assimilated Poles, no?
Yeah, yeah, that's me. Yeah, I feel very Warsaw today.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
I bet you do. There's never been a better time for feeling Warsaw. What an extraordinary, you know, sometimes we're a bit down, underwhelmed even by international football, but there have been so many extraordinary things over the last 3-4 days. Robin van Persie, his hat trick. Nicholas Bentner, a brace. And that Giroud chip, part of France's 6-0 thrashing of Australia, which, again, we'll probably come to later. Probably the outstanding moment of this and maybe any international weekend ever was the late, late moment when Mexico were playing Panama at the Azteca Stadium. Absolutely rammed Azteca Stadium. Absolutely crucial match. And 1-1 was the score in the 86th minute. And then, Marcus Christensen's just miming it.
Yeah.
Don't hurt yourself, Marcus.
An absolutely classic goal, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
Kick and in the, like I say, 86 minutes. Extraordinary scenes. Brilliant.
What
a way to score a winner.
What a way. Because it's the miscontrol, as he admits later on. He meant to just trap the ball, but it skies up. It basically rebounds off his foot and flies about 10, 12 feet in the air. As he goes, I'll just do a chilena. And many thanks to Viva Chepo, who alerted us to the brilliant Panamanian front page the next day, which is quite simply, Chilena.
Brilliant.
The implications of that is that Mexico now very much back in the game as regards the fourth spot in the group. Is it the fourth spot?
Yeah, fourth spot. And they would likely play New Zealand in a playoff.
That's right, so, yeah. And Panama are needing a miracle. Yeah, they host the USA.
Well, the USA, they've already qualified.
Yeah,
USA,
but... So, there is that suggestion that they could... But, well, hey, we don't know anyway. England in the meantime. England, big game for them on Tuesday. But a big win for them Friday night, John Ashdown against Montenegro.
Yeah, it was. They actually played quite well. It was quite strange to watch in a way. I do think Montenegro made it fairly, not easy for them, but they played into their hands a little bit by just sitting off a little bit too much and kind of... A Wembley that was actually raucous and had a great atmosphere. England were kind of always, you know, wanted that chance to get on the front foot and make a sort of fast start. And Montenegro kind of let them do it a little bit. But that's not to take
But they didn't
much
have
away.
A fast start. I mean, it was a very frustrating first half.
Well, they were kind of
the match,
they immediately were sort of on the front foot, weren't they? There was never any kind of, even in that sort of slow first half, there wasn't too much, maybe just before half time there was a bit, but there wasn't too much kind of worry at any point that Montenegro were ever going to come out and really trouble them too much. And it just allowed England to kind of, even though there was kind of a certain amount of stress creeping in by half time, the game was always moving in the right direction for England.
Yeah,
to me.
And it was moving on the right hand side in the right direction with Kyle Walker and Andros Townsend, loads of pace on that side, and I think that made a big difference to England against Montenegro because we were constantly getting behind them on that side and getting some decent deliveries into the area. And as everybody saw, Andros Townsend had a great debut. He was fearless. I mean, he kind of summed up all those English attributes, which is maybe why he had a good game for England, in that he had pace, he had power, he didn't seem to be that inhibited by the pressure of playing for England, as other players who perhaps are bigger names and more heralded and there's more expected of them do. I think he came in and just got on with it and played very, very well.
I've seen his debut likened to that of Sean Wright Phillips, who also opened up with a goal and... but didn't quite live up to it.
There's certain players who, I don't know, there's strange players who become very good England players who maybe don't, do it at club level. I'm not suggesting Townsend, might not have a great club career, but there's always the danger that they have a few good games for England, keep playing for England, and then don't, maybe gets dropped down to the bench at Spurs and then doesn't get selected again. So you can have an England career that stalls after five or six games and because you can't replicate your international form at club level. So, I mean, you look at Darius Vassell, for instance, he's decent for England. Steve Stone, these kind of names from the past.
But you don't see Andros Townsend going that way?
No, who knows? He had one good game. He'll probably, he's going to play again. I just because he's at Spurs, and Spurs have got such a big squad with lots of names that they've got to fit in, it's whether he gets regular football there.
Right, Aaron Lennon would be the direct rival, would it?
For England?
No, for Spurs.
Yeah, at Spurs with him, yes. And, and with England as well, he's got Lennon there as a rival as well as Walcott, I suppose. I just thought he's an interesting player. I mean, if a player such as Wilfried Zaha, who's more of a dribbler, a bit of a tricky player, those kind of players maybe don't burst onto the scene with England in the same way. I mean, he's made his appearance for England already.
But what about Wayne Rooney in the meantime, Marcus?
Well, Rooney, I think, is great. He's clearly enjoying his football at the moment.
It's nice to see.
It is nice smile to on see, his face, actually. Exactly. Yeah. On the pitch, and there's obviously before the game he came out, and there was still the Ferguson stuff and still not happy playing in midfield and stuff, but he does seem to be enjoying his football and it just shows what a good player he can be as well. But I don't think we should get too carried away either, because it was Montenegro and it's England's first kind of big win in the group, and they were missing their three or four best players, and it'd be different. And you look at some of the other teams, still Germany, Belgium and stuff like that, and I think it's different class at the moment, even though it's encouraging England, but I think they got five or six European teams ahead of them at the moment.
Right, interesting. Poland coming up on Tuesday, might that be a tougher match than this?
Most certainly, yeah. I think they clearly got some.
Even though they just lost against Ukraine?
Yes, but Ukraine is a tough place to go, as we all know. Mm. Roy knew that and set out for a draw.
Poland were quite unlucky against Ukraine as well. I mean, they had about 70% of possession and a good few chances to score themselves. So,
right.
Yeah, they gave it a go, but they got caught.
Well, fashionably enough, you're an assimilated Pole yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can tell us all about their team. And Marcus, you also have just done a piece on Boric as well, and his extraordinary rollercoaster career. You've got your Boric in goal.
Yeah. You've got this Kamal Glik in defence, who sounds like a brilliant player. You may know him.
A little bit. Torino. I mean, he's been having a great time at Torino, so much so that local rapper Wally Peyote, has dedicated an absolutely brilliant, brilliant bit of hardcore Torino hip-hop.
You have to go on and watch it. It's a fantastic video and what I can understand from my Italian, fantastic
basically,
song as well.
He disses, he calls out Borriello and Matri as players more worried about their hair.
Is that fair on Borriello and Matri?
I think it is. Yeah. I think it's certainly because Torino, they're both players who looked a little bit girly up front for Juventus. Mm. I don't think Juventus fans would probably join in that, but Peyote very much from the Torino side of the tracks. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, we were talking about Poland.
Poland. So he's in central defence, and there's another video where he takes out someone, which forces the commentator in Italian to go, "Oh," kind of thing. It's a horrendous tackle.
So he's no nonsense.
Yes, no
he's got
nonsense.
He could play for him. He does know how to tackle.
Yeah.
Who else have we got? Lewandowski, of course,
absolutely.
Up front.
You've got another Lewandowski now, which is confusing because the manager brought in 34-year-old Marius Lewandowski into midfield, who hadn't played since 2009, which could confuse MBMers tomorrow night who aren't aware of that. He's not a particularly great player.
Right.
Yeah, anyway, I don't want to talk about the negatives too much. What I mean, Poland have essentially got three or four very, very good players, and beyond that, the rest of the squad has been rotated for the last 2 years. There's players coming in and out of positions, which has probably cost them any kind of consistency, and means that a lot of the performances have been disjointed because of the fact that they've only got three or four permanent fixtures in the team.
Mm.
So I mean, and they've also got Piszczek is out.
Yeah,
he's injured, and that affects their right-hand side because they've got such a good understanding with Błaszczykowski in front of him,
right,
from the Dortmund, they play together at Dortmund.
Equally, England will be without Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
The English Piszczek, as many people
call. Yeah, yeah. They'll probably be with Phil Jones.
Who will be Phil Jones?
He'll be doing his best to headbutt Wayne Rooney accidentally at some stage in the match, no doubt.
Right. What they will have, Poland, is a goalkeeper.
Yes.
Unlike Montenegro.
Arthur. Nicknamed the Holy Goalie from his Celtic days, and he's been in and out of the Poland team probably five or six times for different reasons, drop of form, breaching discipline, calling Smuda the name of a fictional character in Poland, which Smuda didn't really like. But probably the best, well, stats-wise, the best keeper in the Premier League this season.
Mm-hmm.
So someone told me, I think it was Jacob Steinberg, that he's hardly had to stop any shots because the Southampton back four has been so brilliant. I haven't seen enough Southampton, but two goals conceded in seven Premier League games.
Very impressive.
Mm.
Very impressive. So England need a win because you don't know, Ukraine might just get that result against San Marino same night. So you need a win, John. How are you feeling about this?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I sort of see them doing it. I think if they carry on where they left off on Friday, they'll be absolutely fine.
Right.
I think it might be a little more edgy though. The Montenegro game to me just didn't feel particularly edgy at all. It was just quite an enjoyable match to watch. I think tomorrow night, tomorrow night is going to be a little bit not more nervy.
All right. 18,000 Polish fans. You going, Greg?
My father-in-law's going, and he doesn't know which end he's going to be in. So,
really?
Yeah, because of this ticketing stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. He's quite an interesting character, actually. He was in a documentary about English-Polish kind of identity in the 70s.
Oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, and in which he was filmed at the 2-0, Poland's 2-0 win away. I can't remember what year it was in. It was in the early 70s. And they followed him around, and he was supporting England then, but he's often wavered and supports Poland. He's like, because he grew up in England.
I think a lot of us have that issue.
Yeah, yeah. And
keep a second team.
Yeah, yeah. It was quite a sweet documentary.
That's nice.
His voice sounded a lot more squeaky because it was, you know, done on old videotape and stuff.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
So, anyway.
Good. So if you do watch the documentary, his voice doesn't actually sound like that.
No. He's got a much deeper voice, yeah.
All right. Well, Graham Corking wants to know if the Brave Three Lions don't qualify, and at this point they're pretty much assured of even at least a playoff spot, huh? Yeah. Who will everyone be supporting? That's maybe a question we'll address after this. Yeah, your options. In case you are from a nation that isn't going to be making it, a poll, perhaps.
Mm.
You know? Then, you know, you've got some exciting options out there, starting, of course, with Belgium, who have now made it certain they're going to be going. And, of course, it was a Lukaku brace for them. Not an easy game, that. They were away in Croatia, also had their hopes on the line. They go into the playoffs now. Croatia had to Lukaku with the brace. Belgium will sell up, but there are lots of exciting front pages after this victory. And they're going to be playing Wales, who also had a win. That's nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Going fourth.
Mm.
Super. Do you want to say anything about Belgium? Or has it already been said now?
They look great. We can say that.
Yep.
It'd be really good to see them up against the big teams in Brazil.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be, that'll be fascinating to see just how good they really are. Because you sort of want them to be as good as they look like they might be.
Mm.
And we don't really know if they are as good as that.
But just to have the ability for Benteke to get injured and then just be able to bring Lukaku in and it's be seamless and just as another fella who can just plunder goals for fun.
Yeah. All right. Germany, they've also booked their spot.
Mm.
3-0. And Sweden, you're definitely taking the playoff spot.
Yes.
Yeah.
But we might need to get a point or even win against Germany to be seeded in the playoffs.
Right.
And the good news here is that Germany went out, the players went out partying after their win on Friday Ireland to a place called Candy Shop in Cologne.
Right.
Anyone been there?
I haven't, no.
No? Good place, apparently. And
Candy Shop.
Yes, that's what it's called, told. And Per Mertesacker was on the dance floor all night, apparently.
Really?
Yeah.
Which is because he couldn't make it back to his chair? Or?
Well, we don't know. The Bild report didn't say that, but
right.
What came out is that they had a good time, didn't train Saturday or Sunday.
Mm.
They're meeting up again and now going to Sweden.
Right, okay. That's big. You want to be seeded, don't you? Because teams like Croatia, Portugal, and either Bosnia-Herzegovina or Greece probably going to be seeded in the playoffs. Teams like France, though, won't. No. Now, we mentioned Giroud and his extraordinary chip goal or wild miscontrol that ended up in the back of the net. I'm not sure. I think he meant it. That was part of that extraordinary 6-0 victory over Australia, which was such a big win that even Benzema scored. Benzema, after 1,222 minutes without a goal for France. Australia have now fired their manager, Holger Osiek. That's the second game they've lost in a row, 6-0. The previous one was against Brazil, but he did qualify them for the World Cup. And it looks like Wusi Dink is going to be coming in.
I think he's been... Osiek has been... He's kind of fallen out of favour for making a few sexist comments in the press. Apparently, and so maybe they were looking for an excuse in a 6-0.
Well, what did he say, Greg?
I've heard he said some sexist things and wasn't really flavour of the month.
Right.
You know, so they maybe used that as a nice excuse.
Right, well, of course, they're very attentive to that kind of thing in Australia.
Yeah.
See, now I'm being racist. Terrible.
Mm.
Lose that, producer Ben. Last thing we need is trouble. Switzerland, they're through.
Yeah.
It's another team you might want to follow.
If you're a fan of really defensive football.
Good for the neutrals, that's pretty
simple. We've also got Greece possibly qualifying again.
I was looking into this and when you take away the result against the team finishing bottom, I think they've scored now 9 goals in 9 games.
Really?
In their
Greece.
Campaign. Yeah.
They know what they are, they know what they do.
And they do it, and they do it again.
Great.
And Bosnia can obviously qualify ahead of them, but they need to win on Tuesday.
Right. Back in Switzerland's group, though, Iceland, the dream is still very much alive for Lars Lagerbäck.
Surely everybody wants Iceland to do well.
Everybody wants Iceland to do well.
Got Bjork and Sigur Rós and, you know.
Kerry Katona.
If you Google Iceland, you do actually get the supermarket before the country. Yeah, that's how small Iceland is as a nation. Yes, they would be the smallest ever nation to get to the World Cup if they got there.
Yeah, but Jonathan Wilson's got there ahead of you because he very much was briefing us on that only in our last pod. They need a win, though, to be certain, because they're only 1 point ahead of Slovenia, so they need a win in Norway.
Yeah, they have to better Slovenia. Well, Slovenia are in Switzerland, so Iceland need to equal or better Slovenia's result in Switzerland to reach the playoffs.
We are knowledge today. You know what, Marcus, I never asked you about the Swedish team. Of course, Ibra scored in the win against Austria. The popular perception is it's an ordinary team plus an extraordinary player. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Very much so, yeah. We are not very good. There is a stat that says we kind of pick up more points without him, but without him, we're a completely different team. Yeah. It's some
that picks
weird
up more
qualifying
points.
In the last 10 years or something.
Oh, okay.
Sweden seem to have got more points without him. But anyway, it's a similar stat with Liverpool winning more points without Suarez and stuff like that. It doesn't matter. It was brilliant, and his goal was fantastic. And then he... got himself booked in the 89th minute. Will now miss the Germany game, but will be available for a playoff. He says he didn't.
It's not
he
the
didn't
only
quite
player.
Mean it. He did kind
he
of push someone over in the 89th minute, and it kind of looked like that. But asked afterwards, he kind of smiled and said, "I needed to slow the game down," which he did.
Right, because Cristiano Ronaldo has also been called out for a similar gamesmanship. Would you call it?
I think it's harsh.
He kicked the ball away in front of the referee and will now miss Portugal's final qualifier, but will be available for the playoffs, which they will be in after their 1-1 draw with Israel. I think that's right. Russia actually still need a point, so it's not mathematically certain that, but it's pretty much sure Russia get top spot, Portugal go into the playoffs. Once again, they're always in the playoffs, that lot. And right. Well, speaking of that, big banner saying Denmark 2, Sweden 2, never forgive, never forget.
Yes.
For the Italians when they travelled to Denmark to take them on in a game that didn't carry any importance qualifying-wise for them because they were already through. But it was, funnily enough, a 2-2 draw.
Yes.
How about that?
And the Danes were gutted.
Were they?
Yes.
Yeah, because Osvaldo, who's actually Argentine anyway, so I don't know why he's bothered about it, was saying, I finally got vengeance on the Danes for that.
Did he?
The draw. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it was his quote, for the biscotto, you know, which is the kind of the fix. But an amazing game, that, because it saw Gigi Buffon becoming the most capped Italian player ever, 137 caps, which he duly celebrated by conceding 2 goals to Nicholas Bentner.
I know, extraordinary. I don't know who the left back was.
Balzaretti.
Was it?
Yeah, he's not the best in the air.
He's not the best at jumping, I noticed. No. Although Bentner's headers were really well directed, though, and very powerful. Like,
they were.
Give him some credit.
Osvaldo's opener was a cracker, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And what about the old our old friend from Liverpool,
Aquilani,
with a kind of ball just bouncing off his shin and probably...
Was it his knee?
Yeah, something.
In the 95th.
It probably injured him as it hit him.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Anyway, Italy are unbeaten in their last 39 qualifying games for World or European, championship things.
How are they looking? Kind of looking ahead to World Cup? Are they?
I think they're looking Italian.
Yeah,
you know, solid.
In a good way.
Yeah, solid. Yeah. They've been very solid through the qualifying, and I know there's a decent pool of talent there.
Mm.
The main point of interest, actually, as they head towards this, is whether Prandelli's going to call up Francesco Totti.
Yeah.
And he's basically said, if Totti's in the kind of form that he's in right now at the end of the season, which is a very big if, of course, at 37 years of age, then he will definitely give him his chance, which means that you would be looking at a front line of Totti and Balotelli, which has got everybody very excited, because, of course, there was that great scene when Totti chased Balotelli down, kicked at him and spat at him in a Roma Inter game.
Did Totti play in... Was he a part of the squad in 94?
No.
So it wouldn't have been a 20-year spread for him or anything like that.
No, although it wasn't long after that he made his debut. Mm. Actually, you know what? I think he made his debut for Roma in maybe 93 or 94, age 16, but no, he didn't make the World Cup squad, because that was very much Sacchi's territory at the time. Right. Well, I don't want to miss any of you nations out there. Spain, of course, they still need a point. Good goal from Xavi. Lots of things we could talk about in Spain. You've got Clasico coming up. You've got Balegate underway. Balegate, not my invention. Brilliant, though, it is. That's actually courtesy of AS, in Madrid newspaper, talking about, of course, the fact that, Marca reckoned that he's got a hernia, but the medics say no, he's only got a chronic disc bulge, which lots of players have, apparently.
It's what, in his back?
Yeah, spinal.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't sound good, does it?
You're the man who has back problems. Can you tell us about that?
I haven't got a chronic disc bulge, though. I've got one leg short than the other, which is my main problem.
Well, does that... Oh, right.
It means I run around in circles. No, it doesn't really. It just means that... This is very incredibly boring, my back problems. But it means I've got a tilted pelvis.
Right.
So my spine slips down into my pelvis slightly, which makes all the muscles tense up and it locks my back up. And it's very painful.
Yeah. Right.
And it requires expensive osteopathy.
Yeah, anything that's wrong in a back, to me, sounds like trouble.
Mm.
I mean, it might not be trouble today, but it will be one day soon and for the rest of your life.
Thanks.
No, I'm just looking at Gareth Bale. They say he may need surgery one day. I'm just saying, you just spent $100 million on a player.
A player who is very reliant on his physicality as well.
Yeah. Maybe we're blowing this out of proportion, I don't know, but Sid will actually be here and sounding a bit funny on Thursday, so maybe we can ask him that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. There's still nations out there, it's a big world, and they're all been playing football. My goodness, the Dutch. Mm. What about the Dutch, eh?
On fire.
Mm.
Yeah.
It was a lovely scene, actually. Did you see when Van Persie broke Kluivert's goal-scoring record?
Hands up who knew that Patrick Kluivert was their top scorer ever.
Had no idea.
No.
Amazing. Nope. Anyway, lovely scene.
And they just ran. And they were both clearly so delighted for each other, which is kind of, particularly when you think of the teams that Kluivert played in for the Dutch, who essentially hated each other quite a lot of the time. Mm. The fact that there was this togetherness between when, you know, the old man and the guy who's broken his record was quite lovely, really.
Mm. Anyway, you got 3. 8-1 against Hungary in a game they, you know, had no effective interest in.
Yeah.
Bizarrely, Hungary could still finish second in that group, although they wouldn't, I don't think they would qualify for a playoff place because they'd be the worst placed. Is that right? No, Marcus is the only person in the pod here who knows how the playoffs work.
Well, Group B look likely to miss out. So
Bulgaria,
Denmark and Armenia and so Hungary Czech Republic.
Hungary so could have been spanked 8-1, yet could still end up in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Oh. Right, although it's Turkey who are looking good for the playoff spot.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, they're both on. They and Romania are both on 16 points. Mm. But who are they playing in the next round?
Well, Turkey have got Holland at home. So okay. It's a home game, and Holland have obviously qualified.
And clearly not very interested in scoring goals. Oh, hang on. and Romania?
They're home to Estonia, I believe.
Really? Good for you, John. I tell you what, let's round off part two with a little bit more qualifying. Now, Central America, we mentioned what's going on there. South America, Argentina and Colombia now qualified, along with host Brazil. It's pretty much clear that it's going to be Ecuador and Chile, and probably Uruguay in the playoff. Uruguay at least the playoff now, which they've been in. I think this will be their fourth straight playoff. Terrific scenes in the Colombia-Chile match. And
Colombia came back from 3-1 down.
Was it 3-0 down?
3-0 down, yeah, draw, I think. Yeah, with Falcao scored twice for them. Not a bad player, him, apparently.
Looks an interesting prospect. Mm. And so that's all quite exciting. Some big names booking their spots in South America, or set to anyway. Africa, blimey, this one's going to go until mid-November. 16th to 19th November is when the second leg of these five playoffs are going on there. As it stands from the weekend, as predicted by Jonathan Wilson, Burkina Faso did beat Algeria. 3-2 was the scoreline. Ivory Coast with Gervinho continuing his cracking club form in their 3-1 win over Senegal. Ethiopia got beaten at home by Nigeria 2-1. Tunisia and Cameroon finished goalless. And Ghana and Egypt playing on the 15th. What day is the 15th?
It's tomorrow.
There you go. That's on Tuesday. And
they've got Bob Bradley, coach, in charge.
How interesting is that?
Very interesting, although I don't know anything more about it.
Okay. I made Amy Lawrence's piece about that, and she pointed out that all Americans have been told by the MC to hot-footed out the country, but he said, I'm going nowhere. And she had a nice little kind of quiet American Graham Greene riff going in her, or she or the sub-editors in the headline, which I think mirrors his position nicely, you know? Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's working for the Secret Service or anything.
It'd be a good cover, wouldn't it?
It would be. Yeah, hiding in very much.
Probably got links to people in quite high places there, you know.
Right.
Suits and stuff.
Cool.
It just seemed very hard to get. African qualifying does seem disproportionately tough for teams to get through, it always strikes me.
Mm.
We were talking about this today. I'd quite like to see some sort of system introduced where there are more teams from globally who get kind of a playoff chance like a lot of the European teams do. Because, you know, you've got Senegal, who are 3-1 down after their first leg, who, you know, are they a worse team?
These are their playoffs now.
Yeah, but they've also topped groups to get into these playoffs, haven't they? So it's kind of like they've had to, and beating decent teams in those groups.
Right.
Are Senegal a worse team than Turkey or Ukraine?
I don't know.
You know? We would find out only if we could create some
good
sort
thought,
of
then, actually,
global qualifying thing.
What you might do, and producer Ben producer Ben says, why don't you get them to play off against, the losers could play off against the playoff teams from Europe.
That would be,
All right, that's another problem solved.
Iceland, Senegal.
And Qatar.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Football's governing bodies are always so open to new ideas and make such really sensible changes that I'm sure they'll listen to this pod and immediately change things, you know.
Yep, absolutely. Now, that's qualifying sorted. Although there'll be a bit more on Thursday, of course. We've got part three, though, to come after this. Here's a post from Owen Lewis who says, how do I get tickets for the pod at the Liberty Stadium? Well, first off, I don't think we're doing it at the Liberty Stadium, although I'm sure we would pack it out. We're going to be doing it at the Dylan Thomas Centre, details for which I think you can find at the link on the Football Weekly page. So there you go. Desert Jack asks, this requires some thought, with the nationality debate over, what would happen if clubs could only sign players from their local area, i.e. within 30 miles, in which case what team would have the best team? I'm going to say Southampton, just off the top of my head.
Good shout.
Really?
No, probably not.
I can't think of any. I don't know. Yeah, they'd have a good left back, I think.
Well, they'd have Luke Shaw. They'd have that fellow, what's his name? Oxlade-Chamberlain. They'd have the Walcott.
Oh, I see. Yeah, they'd have to Gareth take them Bale. Back. Yeah, yeah, I see. Yeah.
Could they? But he wasn't born
there.
I would have thought you brought up through.
I would have thought your Liverpool, Manchester kind of London clubs probably then, probably. So if that's the case, because London clubs could take in.
Yeah, if there was a 30-mile area, you've got a lot more people.
You're going to have a huge battle for London players.
Yeah.
Desert Jack, you haven't thought this one through at all. Sid's by any chance of a mention for the O's at some point? Obviously, some form of anti-East End Minnows agenda going on here. Go on then, John. No,
we mentioned them last time I was on, a week ago.
They're appealing to the European Court of Human Rights or something like that, are they not?
Well, the stadium.
Yeah. This is Leighton Orient we're talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, Leighton Orient. I'm not entirely sure what the stadium situation is currently.
I think it's a kind of a lost cause, but they're still
going to rumble
away
on for a while. Yeah. They're still top of League One as far as I know.
Mm-hmm.
I think
they won 3-2 at the weekend.
Yeah, I think I'm right saying they're still undefeated as well.
Mm.
10 wins and a draw in 11 games, I think.
Who's their manager?
Russell Slade.
There you go.
Yeah.
Good.
Mentioned.
Right. Yeah, well, he's done a fantastic, absolutely fantastic job there. He signed something like 31 players without paying a transfer fee.
Really? On freeze?
All on freeze in the kind of 2 or 3 years that he's been there, which is incredible, really. And he's got them, on the way to the championship, it looks like.
Any big names in that 31?
Not particularly, no. I mean, you've got people like the old-timers, like sort of Kevin Lisby, who's still banging them in. Romain Vincelot, the midfielder, who's kind of quite an important part of the side now. And they're kind of a unheralded bunch, really, but playing fantastically well.
Their chances of hanging on to top spot or one of the two automatic promotion positions?
Fairly good. I mean, you've got some of the big beasts like Peterborough playing pretty well, and Wolves are still sort of knocking around there. So you wonder over the course of the season if their kind of greater squad depth is going to pay off. But they've got a chance. 11 games is more than just a half-decent start, isn't it? It's kind of a quarter of the season. So, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. I think it is.
Just about. Just shy of a quarter of the season.
Is it not even a quarter of the way through the season?
No, that'd be 44 games and they play 46.
Long season. Yeah. Mm. Long. Michael Fred Ryan, on a scale of 1 to bad, how bad are Sheffield United?
So if 1 being abysmal and 10 being just bad...
I don't know how that works, actually.
They're awful, essentially. They're absolutely terrible at the moment.
Right.
And they're managerless and fairly directionless. In fact, and after an hour of their game against Coventry yesterday, they were 3-0 down and staring down the barrel. They did come back and manage to lose 3-2 in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But they're rooted to the bottom of League One.
David Weir already having been...
David Weir was dismissed on Friday. Yeah,
Friday.
Winning one of his 13 games in charge. I mean, on one level, it looks quite harsh. 13 games, he's trying to introduce a new philosophy into the entire club, change the way that they play. And can you do that in 13 games? Probably not, really. But what you want to see in those 13 games is some signs that it's going to improve at some point. And it really wasn't looking like that. They were dreadful.
Right. And bottom of League One at the moment.
And bottom. Yeah, rock bottom.
Is there any chance of Neil Warnock going back?
Well, I think a few fans would welcome him with open arms. Mm. But it would just be so like, oh, I mean, it would be a,
wouldn't you welcome that?
He'd improve us, but it'd be like, oh, so we're gonna go and do it that way, are we? Are we sort of going back to the whole sort of point of the club over since getting rid of Warnock when we got relegated from the Premier League in 2007 or whenever it was to change the mentality of the club, and they've tried it a few times, first with Brian Robson.
To give him a losing mentality instead of a winning one.
Well, yeah, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like basically trying to play football in a kind of more aesthetic way rather than in kind of like an up-and-at-em approach. And every time that they've appointed somebody who's tried to do that, it's failed.
Mm.
Brian Robson struggled. Gary Speed was struggling before he left for the Wales job. And now David Weir. And every time we sort of kick back to the kind of the old way of doing it, and things improve slightly.
Neil Warnock had the old Michael Tong, kind of on the wing, a nice little dribbler on the wing, and a few decent players.
Yeah, he had a good team there at the time. That's interesting. Russell Slade was the guy who spotted when Michael Tong and Phil Jagielka were released by, I think, Everton and Man United as kids. He spotted them while he was youth coach at Sheffield United and brought them through. So that's another feather in his cap.
Good stuff. All this, of course, against the backdrop of the Middle Eastern takeover at the club.
Yeah, and I think that probably has slightly increased the pressure on whoever comes in to kind of get results fairly quickly, and they don't really want to waste too many more. You know, they've been in League One for two seasons now. It's hard to see them, even if things improve drastically. I mean, I know it's fairly early days still, but it's hard to see them getting the playoffs from this point. I mean, it's possible. I mean, it's always possible. But so you're thinking that's a third season. So that's a fourth season coming up after this one. Yeah, and you know, he wants a return on his investment, although he hasn't made
it.
When he makes the investment, he'll want to return on it. So the people in the frame are Nigel Clough's been mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
Although he was, I think, he's quite keen to take a bit of time out of the game, having been sacked by Derby only a few weeks ago. And Peter Schmeichel was mentioned this morning. Peter Schmeichel was tweeting this morning that he'd seen his name linked and he was honoured and whatnot. So,
really?
That's a come get me plea if there ever was one, wasn't there?
Right. Is he involved in coaching at any level, Peter Schmeichel?
I don't think so. I think he's just involved on the BBC sofa mostly.
He has a lucrative side career in the Claire Boarding lookalikey industry at the moment. Oh. Yeah, they're not the only casualty in League One, David Weir. Gillingham, after your revelations about Martin Allen's board game preparations for...
Yeah.
Seems the board of his games, if you'll...
He rolled a double one.
Yeah.
That little tiny egg timer that you get with Pictionary ran out on him.
Ran out.
And on Sunday, he was sacked after two wins in the 11 games this season.
Mm.
Which is a shame. I mean, after getting them up last year,
yep.
Bit of a victim of his own success, or perhaps just a victim of his board games.
Hmm.
There's strange going on at Cardiff as well. There's a board meeting today, and Malcolm Mackay, who knows what's going to happen.
Right. Well, the problem there is a boardroom malaise in a very real sense.
Very much so.
Yeah. Really, because I thought all that had been resolved over the weekend.
No, I don't think so. He's going to a board meeting, and they're going to try and sort out some issues.
Oh, dear.
Mm.
He must be absolutely furious.
And rightly so, I think.
Indeed. Greg, take us into the conference.
I will, where a Mr. Edgar Davids, who Marcus commissioned a piece to be written, I presume it was you, in the Observer, about Edgar Davids on Saturday evening, Sunday morning, saying, you know, it's amazing that he's down there and he's, you know, he's taking his pit bull mentality into the dressing room. And then he took it onto the pitch, literally, yesterday against Wrexham, where he picked himself in his number one shirt, as he does, as possibly the smallest ever centre-half. And played very well at centre-half and managed to keep Wrexham out and Barnet were winning 1-0 up until the 90th minute when there was a free kick given on the edge of the box. He went to grab the ball to waste a bit of time and using his experience as he would. And Stephen Wright, former Liverpool right-back, came steaming over to grab the ball of him. And as he tried to grab it, Davids, it was like a really, really quick left arm that just threw up and his elbow... really did smash right in the mouth. Apparently he needs a skin graft now.
Skin graft.
Yeah, skin graft. That's serious stuff. Left him on the floor. He got up.
Where would the skin graft be? Like in his lip or? We're not sure.
No. I'm not sure. No offence to Stephen Wright, but he hasn't got the best looks anyway in the first place.
Good thing you said no offence then, otherwise he might have been offended.
I wouldn't want to offend him.
Edgar Davids, he's a scary fella.
Yeah, he is, but then Wrexham scored an equaliser off the back of that free kick and he didn't really help his team out much. And then 2 minutes later there was a horrific tackle by a Wrexham player on a Barnet player in which a leg was broken and another sending off. So it was...
Watching this game, Greg?
I've seen some highlights. Became aware of it last night. It was a particularly tasty game. And Davids is just a strange character because apparently he can just decide when he comes and goes at Barnet. He's like, well, if he decides to come in today, great. If he decides he doesn't want to work for us anymore, then he doesn't get paid anyway. So what does it matter? I'm not necessarily sure that's probably the best thing to have. The best manager to have somebody you don't know if he's going to come in the next day.
Does he take his hat off for games?
Yeah, he takes his hat off. Oh, he takes his glasses off.
I've worked with him in studios. He refuses to take his hat off.
Really?
Yeah.
But it's the third time in the last 27 games for Barnet that he's been sent off.
Oh, really?
As a player manager, that's fairly good.
Yeah, he really doesn't play very often. He didn't.
It's only his fourth game or something.
But it's going to be difficult to hold a pre-match talk about discipline, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're saying he's only played four times? But he's had three red cards.
Four times this season. But in the last 27, he's had three red cards.
Oh, that's a shame, because that would have been great.
He's fucking Edgar Davids, though, isn't he? Yeah. I shouldn't have...
Producer Ben, and again... Producer Ben says he's been booked in every single game for Barnet this season.
Three bookings and a red card.
Wow.
Do you see him interviewed after the game? And they were showing him the footage of him. Basically, he's got the ball tucked in his arm, hasn't he? The elbow sort of swings round. And he says, yes, I was just too... How can I say... Eager to hold on to the ball. Fair enough then, Edgar.
Edgar.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, and also, he now misses the opportunity to play against Hereford at the weekend, who play at Edgar Street. So Edgar misses the chance to play at Edgar Street.
Wow.
Amazing.
What was he thinking?
Yeah. Well, on that lovely note, that's where we conclude today's Football Weekly. Thursday, we'll have more of that international stuff. And I look forward to the return of club football. Just when we were really getting into this whole international narrative, club football has to come along and...
Ruin it all.
Well,
we have to wait all the way until February for some nice friendlies or something.
No, actually, it's November.
Oh,
yeah, it's tough in November.
Scratch that. Then.
There'll be playoffs, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, of course.
And, of course, the second legs of those African things. But anyway, Thursday, blah, blah, blah. In the meantime, many, many thanks to Marcus Christensen.
Thank you.
Producer Ben, John Ashdown, and Greg Bakowski. And enjoy your action on Tuesday night. We'll speak to you on Thursday.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace, providing creative tools that help you bring your ideas to life. Squarespace offers free domain names, customizable designs, drag and drop tools, and 24/7 support. Squarespace also offers seamless e-commerce solutions for you or your small business. Every design automatically includes a unique mobile experience that matches the overall style of your website, so your content will look brilliant on any device. Start your free trial today, no credit card required. As a Guardian podcast listener, you'll get 10% off your new account by using the offer code GUARDIAN.